Hey listeners, this is the Sales Change Podcast. Episode 14 features Matt Newman. Matt lives and works out of Philadelphia in the USA, and since 1997, he's been a financial services wholesaler. At the age of 39, Matt was diagnosed with brain cancer. Boom. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I connected with Matt on Instagram and instantly was taken by his story. I've just read his book, Starting at the Finish Line, which chronicles the entire journey that him and his family took whilst battling brain cancer. And wow, it's an inspirational story. I had to get him on the podcast. During the podcast, we talk about Matt's journey through brain cancer and the treatment and the radiation therapy and all of that sort of stuff. We also talk about how he's coping with the current pandemic. And also, how can you sell whilst even having brain cancer? I asked the question. We find out the answer. If you want more information about this episode and you want to know more about Matt, visit the website. It's www.saleschange.co.uk. Enjoy this episode. Matthew Newman, welcome to the Sales Change Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'll tell you what, before we get into this, just so the listeners are aware, I connected with your Instagram maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and instantly I was caught by your story. Just reading exactly what you've been through, how you've coped and how you've come out the other side and the change in perspective on your life. It made me instantly buy your book, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But just wow, man, honestly.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's funny, you learn the greatest lessons in life at the deepest and darkest of times, and you're given this new lens to look through, a new perspective. And we can either take that and we can own it, like what we're going through right now with the pandemic and whatnot. It's horrible and we're dealing with life-changing things, but there's going to be that silver lining we could find that we could take, we can own it, and we can learn from. And when we open ourselves up to that, it really changes, you know, our views, the type of lenses we're wearing, seeing everything.
It's true. It's true. How are you coping with the current pandemic? How's things?
Things are okay. You know, it's interesting. I've seen it from a multitude of different levels. I've seen it from my children that are homeschooling, which wives seem to love very much. They're trying to deal with all that. I've seen it from a change to this new normal, whether it's sales, finance, whatever it's going to be. There's a lot of things happening today that will never change. There's going to be some people who will never shake hands ever again.
Yeah.
There's going to be some people who see the efficiency of doing these Zoom meetings and connecting with people with less travel and building deeper relationships in a better, easier way of doing things. And we could either embrace that and we can own it and we say change breeds opportunity. We're going to run with that, or we could stay complacent and keep wanting to go back to the old ways. So I'm trying to view this from the perspective of I'm going to take lessons from it. But I think the hardest thing about what we're going through with this pandemic, because it's something none of us have ever experienced before.
And probably never will, ever again.
Well, let's see where this goes. I mean, I think the more that we digest it, it's almost a desensitizing that's happening to it. Like Some people are probably doing some things they shouldn't do yet, but there's this urge to get back and be who we are. But we have to be careful about it, because what if this thing morphs into a variety of different types of strands and could affect people it's not affecting now?
I tell you what we've found. I've got a wife and 3 kids at home, and this is why your story resonated with me so massively. But my wife was so set on working so much, getting clients in, making sure that she was at the shops, preparing food. All of that has changed. I mean, we couldn't leave the house for 6 to 7 weeks without a valid reason. All of this has changed. And you know what? She's looked up after 6 or 7 weeks and experiencing this new normal and gone, I don't need to do any of that. This perspective, this has given me a massive different perspective on where I need to be in my life and what's important. And spending time with the kids in the garden, and I know you talk about this in your book, is just unreal, honestly.
We spend a lot of time focusing on what happened yesterday and what's going to happen tomorrow. I think we unfortunately have to go through difficult times or challenges in life to learn about living in the moment and appreciating it now. It's easier said than done, but once you're able to comprehend that, take it, own it, and not give it back, you start to have a different understanding of things, that whatever's happening right now, it's about now. It's not about yesterday. It's not about tomorrow. And if I'm always focusing on these other things, you're not really giving your children the lessons and the attention that they probably deserve.
And that's one thing that really resonated with your book. So let's get into it. Tell me about your book, Matt.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's that when I started to go through my experience, and things happen, I've started to understand, for a reason. I used to believe in irony. I don't believe in irony any longer. And I started in the financial services industry, and I started in 1997. My father was a financial advisor. My mother was a teacher. It was two completely different occupations, but they were great lessons I was able to learn at a young age. Lessons that didn't make sense to me at that point. But they planted these seeds inside my belly almost, that as I started to grow and as I started to get older, they started to blossom. And I started to take these lessons that I learned years ago, and they made more sense at that point. And I really wanted to get into the financial services as well too. My father was a financial advisor, a planner, and I learned the basics of planning at a very young age that, again, as I got older, made sense. So I became what's called a wholesaler. My father wouldn't let me join his firm. He told me, you got to go out, get licensed, and no free lunches here. And as upset and angry as I was, it was one of the greatest lessons in life. And what a wholesaler does is very similar to a financial advisor, except a company will manufacture products like a mutual fund, a 401k. And then they send wholesalers out who have the same licenses as the financial advisors to show them why they should use their product, where it fits, so on and so forth. But I took three basic lessons that my father gave me. One is, if you don't believe in the product, don't sell it. Lose the battle to win the war. It's really about building relationships. It's about building trust. It's about building conviction. Number two was always be honest. People could see when you're lying a mile away and you never forget that, because you've always been honest. Look people in the face and they'll know you're sincere. And number three was keep your work ethic. I got a soccer scholarship to play in college. He goes, you keep that work ethic and those other two things there, you can go do whatever you need to do. And I took those basics of planning and decided everything that I was going to talk about, I was going to do. I was going to be the shoemaker whose kids had shoes, because that way I would feel comfortable in everything that it was that I'm saying. And I started my career, and everything started to go good. I moved down to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, lived right next to where the Liberty Bell was, where the National Constitution Center, this beautiful burgeoning area of young people, medical students, law students. And it was a great place to be. I grew up outside New York City, but that became my home pretty much instantly.
When
I started this career, everything started to go extremely well. My business shot through the roof. I understood sales. I understood connection.
Where did that come from, Matt? Where did that understanding of sales?
You know, it's a great question. I think a lot of us have it in our belly. We just don't know how to incorporate it. What I started to learn at a very young point in my sales career was people buy people. They don't buy products.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's just the reality. People buy you, they buy your belief. But what I also found was that the more you get to know people on a personal connection, the deeper the relationship gets. And I started to build these amazing relationships at a young age, because I wasn't asking them about, how do you need my product? How do you need, I was asking more about, tell me about your family. Tell me about your business. Like, what are your passions? What are your beliefs? It was just what I thought was doing right, but it started to make sense. And at a young age, I became the top guy in my company. Then I became one of the top people in our entire industry. And everything started to go well. I got married in 2006. And about 9 months after our marriage, our first child was about to be born. I will let you do the math on that one right there. And about a month before that, we moved out of Philadelphia. And we moved to an area called Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And it's a beautiful rural area, about 30 minutes from Philly and about an hour from Manhattan. And as we moved out there, my first child's about to be born. And my dad says, what do you say every day to your clients? The job of the financial advisor is to be there when things are bad. Our job is to give people good news at a difficult time. Our job is to show we had a plan in place prior to the negative, to give independence and dignity when people need it. He goes, you do everything you say? I go, yeah. He goes, you're about to have a child. Have you done your will? Have you done your power of attorney? Have you done the basic foundation of financial planning that if something bad happens, things will be taken care of? I'm like, well, dad, beast mode over here, you know? Huff mutters doing. He goes, do you practice everything you preach? And over the next week, I did all of that. And the misconception on financial planning is it's about investments. It's not. If it was a pyramid, investments are the top. It's the basic foundation of having these things in place, that I have a power of attorney. So if something happens to me, my wife can make the proper decisions for my family. If I have a will in place, I can distribute things the way they're meant to be done and avoid certain legal ramifications, regardless of what country you're in. There's all these basics that have to be put in place that we don't, because no education system in the world teaches children this.
Yeah, we don't.
They go into the real world. They're trained to get into the real world. There's nothing.
No.
And I started to do all this stuff. And I took care of that. And in 2010, my father-in-law, Larry, at 60, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. My first experience with cancer happened when I was 15 years old. My grandma, Grandma Harriet, was diagnosed with cancer. I wasn't old enough to remember it. I wasn't old enough to understand it. But I remember one day she was Grandma Harriet. The next day she was wearing a cancer turban. And the next day she was gone. What I do remember was what it did to my mom. My mom and grandmother spoke every single day. Every weekend they were at our house. We were at their house. I saw this pain. I saw this anguish. I saw my mom crying. She became a different person. It built up this anger inside of me for cancer of why are you doing this? To be honest, I wish I could have been there for my mom. I wish I would have hugged her more. I didn't get it. I wasn't old enough to really be there.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife was the same way with her father. There were two peas in a pod. And my wife was pregnant with our third child. We had two. And she just made it her job to every day drive him back and forth 45 minutes to the University of Pennsylvania, get his Whipple procedure, go through everything he needed to go through, chemo, radiation. And the reality is pancreatic cancers, you have a very short shelf life. What's interesting is cancer is like a roller coaster. It goes up, it goes down, left, right. It does what it wants. It doesn't care about our feelings, doesn't care about our emotions. It's got its own plan and going to do it whenever it wants.
That's a great way of looking at it, actually, Matt, because living with cancer must be a roller coaster in itself, because you never know where the next hurdle is going to come from, or whether the ups and the downs.
You're right. It's unpredictable. It has there's no plan to it, and it could appear in different parts. So when he went through that, I remember him sitting there telling me, because he had two major goals. One, he was only 60 years old, that he would see all three of his grandchildren born. And number two was that he wanted them to all be old enough to have real memories of him. I watched The Warrior. I watched Inspiration. He never bitched. He never complained. He did what he needed to do, took on the battle at hand, went through ridiculous amounts of chemotherapy and radiation. And my wife just did everything she needed to do to take care of her family, take care of me, and be there for her dad. It was inspirational to watch this. Yeah. And two and a half years later, I got in a car accident driving to near the New York City area. And it was just a little fender bender. And that night I got home and my head was just pounding. And I've never really gotten headaches before. My wife suffers from chronic migraines. And it was hurting and hurting. And my father-in-law's on the couch going through chemo. His roller coaster's going back down. And I started to have these what I thought were strokes. I speak professionally. So I'd be speaking, giving a speech on something. And all of a sudden, slur and gurgle would pour out of my mouth. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what was going on. And it started to happen and happen. And it would happen. I'd be jogging or doing a run or working out. It would happen. And physically, I was doing everything I was supposed to do, but I couldn't comprehend what was going on.
Did none of this happen prior to the accident? Did you have no headaches, nothing?
Nothing. It's a great question you ask. And so what's interesting is this started happening in January of 2013.
Yeah.
On May 14th, 2013, so 7 years ago, 2 days from now, I got my 11th one of these. And that was the time I said, I got to get to the hospital. And I often get asked, what took you so long? And beast mode, man, I'm tough. Yeah, exactly. So what happened is I get down to the hospital and my wife meets me there and they tell me they got to give me an MRI, a CAT scan first. It's like, yeah, it's cool. It's like an X-ray, no big deal. So they give me a CAT scan and a few hours later they come in and go, we know the problem. I'm like, yeah, let's diagnose it, fix it. Tell me the deal. They go, you have right here, you got a problem in the left frontal lobe of your brain. You have a lesion. And to me, a lesion was a cut or a bruise. So to go back to your point, I'm thinking, I hit my head in that car accident. Yeah. Damn, the airbag went off. Okay, this is making, they go, you are having brutal pain. I'm like, oh, you don't have half of it. You're actually not only having brutal pain, it's preventing you from sleeping. I'm like, yes, that's exactly right. You're not having strokes, Mr. Newman. You're having seizures. And that's what's causing this. And as difficult as that sounds to digest, I was like, yeah, that okay. Finally, someone's telling me what it is. Let's fix it. So I had to go for MRI, 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 shoot me with contrast, all this stuff. That's 7 hours later. My wife says to me, it's probably about 2-3 in the morning. She goes, listen, I'm going to go home. I got to get a ride for my dad down to chemotherapy. I'm going to make lunch for the kids. I'll be back in like an hour and a half. I go, I got to go in the tube for one more thing anyway. Take your time.
Yeah.
So they come in and they bring a wheelchair and they go, all right, Mr. Newman, MRI, MRA, we got to bring you down. I said, I could walk down there. I just did a 10-mile run, you know, the Broad Street run in Philly 8 days ago. They go, liability, got to get in the wheelchair. So I get in the wheelchair and she pulls up the clipboard, goes, all right, Mr. Newman, MRI, MRA, we need to see how big your brain tumor is. And I just turn my head, I go, it's a lesion. And that's the moment I was diagnosed with brain cancer at 39 years old.
And they gave you no indication prior to that.
You know, it's interesting. I hold no anger or animosity. It's vernacular. One of the things we do, depending on the business that you're in, we often speak a language of that business. Many of us make the mistake of talking that to our clients. They don't know what the hell we're talking about. You know, it's like a mechanic. He starts talking to me about, so here's what I'm going to do to your car. And all I'm thinking is, dude, when can I pick it up and how much does it cost? I buy you. I have no idea what you're talking about with the ball bearings or anything like that. It's the same with them. A lesion, that's really what it is. So my wife, one of my best friends and one of our closest family friends, is a pediatric anesthesiologist up at Columbia Presbyterian in New York City. After she called him, she knew. By the time I saw her the next morning, she knew already. And so I don't blame a doctor or anything. That's their vernacular. They should get lessons in bedside manner about how to communicate with us. But they brought me in. I went through the MRI. And when they brought me back, I started to cry. I have retrospective on my life. And they plugged me into a million machines. And we often talk about strength. Strength's how big our arms are and strength's how much we bench press. Strength is something that's located deep down in our bellies. And at the deepest and darkest of times, we can find it, we can grab it, we can own it, we can make it ours. I didn't know I had it in me. I saw it, I reached out, I grabbed it, and I just started cursing my brains out. And the doctor and the nurses come running in, like, oh my God, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. That was my pity party. And that was the moment I said, if I'm going down, I'm going down swinging, and I'm giving it everything I got. And I didn't know I had that in me. But I had a new perspective on strength. I had a new lens that was given to me to see life and understand how fragile it is and how real that it is. And as that started to happen, my wife walked in the next morning and they told me I was going to get surgery that Friday. This was Wednesday. And I was going to get a full craniotomy. They were going to cut half my head off, do a huge C right here, pull the jaw out, take the brain tumor out. And I'd know about 10 days later the severity of it. I wasn't nervous. It sounds weird. I wasn't. I was like, okay, that's what we got to do. Let's go get this done. And I remember my mom, my wife saying to me, she goes, my father, my mom, and your parents are coming down. Listen, you could sit there and tell someone their kid has brain cancer. We all know what that means. It means they're going to die. And I know there's going to be fear. There's going to be anger. There's going to be angst. There's all those things coming along.
Is that the start of when you were on that roller coaster then? Did you have periods then when you wanted to, look, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to face this. This is it. My parents are coming down to see me. I'm going to have to tell them that this is the end. Were those thoughts that were going through your head, or was it, right, I've had this pity party. I've had that 6 hours or whatever of cursing and shouting at the world. Now I'm going to focus on doing what I need to do, and that's it. Get healthy.
I can tell you this, and I sincerely mean this. I never thought it. After that moment, I wasn't worried.
No.
I really wasn't. I don't know why. I can't tell you that. But all I know is once I had that little pity party, at no point was like, oh, this is going to be the, I was like, I'm just going to go through this shit and I'm going to kick this thing's ass. That's why we hear this stuff about how strong somebody is. I've learned what strength really is. Yeah. Strength is these emaciated people that are going to be passing on, that are fighting with dignity and they're giving it everything they had and they're appreciating that moment and they're making it ours. That's real strength. And I've seen it and I've been part of it and it's been a gift that I've been given and I'm not giving that gift back. So when my parents came in, before they did, I told my wife to give me the iPad. She goes, yeah, do you want to watch a movie? They'll be here in like 25 minutes. I go, no, give me the iPad. You know what the first thing I pulled up on the iPad was? My will. I needed to make sure that if something didn't go right, my family would be taken care of. Check. I need to make sure my power of attorney was done. What if I can't talk? What if something happens? They're doing brain surgery. Check. I pulled up my life insurance. I pulled up my mortgages. Financial planning is not about how much money you have. Financial planning is having a plan in place prior to the negative. And as this is going on, you know what I realized at that moment? Every speech I ever gave was about me. I just didn't know it yet because I did everything I talked about and it allowed me to avoid regret, resentment.
Do you think that's why you were so successful, Matt?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
Because you lived and breathed everything that you were preaching.
I do. I think there's another component to it too. This is my two cents. There's no scientific data behind this. I think being in good shape really helped a lot. I think being physically fit, eating on the healthier side allowed me to have more energy and more vigor and more fight inside of me. I can't sit there and give you all this data on that, but I know that I got operated on a Friday that morning and I had pretty severe surgery. I went home on Sunday. Most people are going to be in the hospital a long period of time. Forget the cost of the hospital, of what you're going to say, but I 100% attribute that. I remember them saying that Saturday. I said, I'm in the ICU. I go, I want to get out of here. Home is where the heart is. That's where my children are. That's why I'm fighting for everything. And I remember them saying to me, like, well, first thing you got to do is you got to pass these tests of walking, going through steps and all this. I was like, okay, let's do it right now. Like, it hasn't even been 24 hours yet. And I passed it. They said, okay, we're not letting you go home today, but you do it again tomorrow, we'll let you go home. Like, so I don't know. I attribute that being, having a physically fit component, which marries wealth and health together, absolutely helped me get out of there and did nothing but pour gasoline on a fire for me to get real fired up about it. So I think it's a combination of the two.
Because one thing I definitely took from your book is you couldn't control what cancer was going to do, but you could certainly control how you were going to react to it and how you were going to deal with it and how you were going to move forward. Because you physically cannot battle cancer. You can't take the cancer out of your head and give it a sword and then start fighting with it. But you can in your head, put a perspective on your life to say, this is what I've got, this is how I'm going to live, and this is what I'm going to cherish for the remainder of my days. Regardless of however long that is, you've got that perspective.
That's exactly. There's a line I use all the time. This is my journey. I own it. Cancer's just riding shotgun. That's it. Like, I don't want to. We're defined by the legacy that we leave. This is not cancer's legacy. This is my legacy. I own it. It's just sitting there playing around with me, and it's in the back seat of the car right now, taking a ride. That's it. If we allow that to take it over, that's what we're remembered for. I don't want to be remembered for that. I want to be remembered for me. I want to be remembered for the impact that I was able to make. Because what I learned is that people going through cancer, the majority of them, they don't want to talk about it with other people. Everybody has to find their outlet, their own catharsis. But they're very comfortable talking about it with people who have been through it. And that's what I never expected. And that's one of the awakenings I was given of how important it is to have support and to give people inspiration when they really need it. And that's what really defines us.
You certainly got that from Larry, from reading your book. You certainly got that warrior spirit from your father-in-law.
No, there's no question. I mean, I look at it as it all happened for a reason. He was there to show me the path. I have no problem saying this. I used to believe in irony. I absolutely, I'm a Jewish guy from North Jersey. I didn't believe in any of that stuff. I absolutely think things happen for a reason right now. Just like the book that I wrote, I have no problem sharing this. After I went through everything, I had this optimism and this amazing belief. And you read the parts about me connecting with my children at their schools and seeing life differently and understanding it more. But here's the fascinating part. The fascinating part of that is, we all often go back to old ways. We all have seen the person who loses a lot of weight, they gain a lot of weight. They change this, then they go back to the old ways. Hanging on to these lessons is very difficult. But what I was able to ascertain through this entire thing is that I needed an outlet, and writing became my outlet. So this is going to sound very odd, but what I would start to do is to my clients, my friends, my family, when I would feel something hit me, like you have to go get checked at the MRI, you have to go get this. Listen, me and cancer are riding in this car together forever. There's no point. It's gone. So what would happen is as I was doing that, my outlet became writing. I would grab a pen, I'd grab a keyboard, and I'd start writing something. I would send it out via email. I was on no social media. It just made me feel better. I was like, oh, it's like vomit, getting it out of your system when you got a stomachache. I never read one after I sent it. It was like, gone. All right, that feels great. I never sat down in my office, was like, let's write something today. Something had to initiate it, and I found an outlet. What's amazing about that is 4 years into it, I had 20,000 people following my emails. And here's the thing. I would get this every day. Hey, Matt, could you put this person on? Could you put this on? Could you? And you know what it made me have a better understanding of? Is cancer is like buying a car. You buy a car, you leave the lot, you see the car everywhere. Well, the reality is the car was always there. You just never noticed it, so you had a direct connection with it. That's cancer. Cancer's everywhere. It's affected every family in some fashion or another. And I'm doing this, and I have no problem telling you this. I'm doing this for me, making me feel better. And where it gets very interesting, I think, is as I'm sending this out more and more, and as I'm furthering my distance, I just decided to write a book. I decided to write a book because it gave me something to continue to outlet for all the optimism, the positivity, the inspiration and motivation I'm giving people. Listen, you're pushing stuff deep down into your belly. I don't care who you are. And at some point, that stuff's got to get out. Anybody who denies that, they're just lying to you. I mean, there's no perfection to this. You're taking on a challenge that I can get a call at any given time during the year and go, hey, it's back or something like that. So, and that's the odds are that could very possibly happen. I was diagnosed with a grade 3 astrocytoma. It's an aggressive form of brain cancer. So what happens is when I wrote that book, I called my mom on March 18th, 2018. And I call my mom up. I go, hey, Ma. The book's coming out tonight. And I'm going to tell you exactly what she said to me. She goes, you know, no one's ever going to read it, right? I go, oh, it's about me. She goes, so here's what you do. You put 3 copies in your safe. And years from now, your children could read the real experience of what really happened and have a better understanding of it. I said, Mom, it's worth it just for that. And 1 week later, in a variety of categories, we were number 1 on Amazon. And I was like, oh my God. But here's the point. What it's about is connection. People are looking for honesty. They're looking for integrity. They're looking for real stories. They don't want tchotchke stuff. They're sick of the canned speeches and all this other kinds of things that are out there. They want to know they're not alone on their journey. They're looking for inspiration from things that really have happened. But there was no plan to do that. I did it for me. But what it taught me from a better perspective is how to really dig in and connect, especially in sales experiences. The more personal connection that's built, the more the heartstrings are tugged, the more reality hits, the deeper the relationships and connections we're building for long-term relationships.
I'll tell you one thing that really struck me is throughout all of your chemotherapy, all of your radiation therapy and all that sort of stuff, you remain a top performer working in sales. How?
You know, it's a great question. To me, one, I think I had a better understanding of connection, like I was just saying.
Yeah.
Number two was I was not going to let cancer dictate my defining of what I do. And I think by using that concept to get better, instead of sitting there and bemoaning and all this. And I get that. It's not easy. Listen, cancer could take us physically. It could never take us spiritually. Some people are put in a bad situation where there's just nothing they could do about it, but they own the way that they will be remembered. And the minute you turn that over to the disease, regardless what it is, that's on us right there. We might be taken, but we have the ability to define how people look at us now they have remembrance of us. Something just happened to me that said, I'm going to get better. I'm going to keep doing this. Like, this is mine. I own this. And I'm not going to sit there in a woe is me thing. I'm going to use these lessons that I'm gifted, this ability to see life from a perspective that's deeper, more rooted in realness. And I'm going to use it because that's me. Yeah. And what I started to have a better perspective of is people are attracted to honesty. They're attracted to realness. And the further you dig deep in that, all of a sudden, it's not that you have the best widget on the street. It's they buy you because of the experience you're creating for them. And I got to be honest, I didn't realize I was doing that at first, but it started to make sense to me later.
You consciously then became aware that you were trading on the fact that you were building empathy with these people. Once they realize that you're empathetic with their situation, they're starting to believe that you believe. And that transference of belief, that transference of enthusiasm in the product or the widget is just how you sell.
Not only is that true, what I also started to realize was that when you share that type of honesty, which again, I did it for me, you attract that honesty from other people. And, you know, I started to point out, like, look at the average salesperson wearing the same shoes, with the same suit, with the same white shirt, with the same red tie, with the same Rolex watch. I mean, there's no face. There's no realness to it. And people by people. And the deeper we get in, and the more you share what really matters to you, the better the results will be over the long haul. And I didn't go into that with a business plan to do it. I was given a clarity because that's what I was doing, because that was me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that I would start to have people trust in me in a way that they didn't before. Because, well, if you've been through this, can I share this with you? And it's been everything from people going through cancer. I've had people call me about they were ready to kill themselves with suicide. All these things. I get calls and emails globally every single day. Yesterday was a bad one. I got a bunch of them yesterday. But you know why? Because they know I can talk to you about this because of...
You've been in that space.
You've been in this spot. And I don't want anybody to be in this spot, But what I want you to do is dig deeper connections with your clients. What are their dreams? What are their aspirations? What really makes them happy? What are their goals in life? All the other stuff will come if we're able to really build that deep connection.
Yeah, yeah. Where can people find the book, Matt?
Sure. So they can go on. So it's called Starting at the Finish Line. There's a couple of ways they could do that. They can go on Amazon.com and they can pull it off of there. They can go on Goodreads. They can go on Barnes Noble. Or they can go on my website, Matthew, which is two T's, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, which like we were saying earlier, only my mom could call me that. Yeah. MatthewSNewman.com. And what's interesting about this, what led to it, besides the book, is I started to speak all over the country. I've done 3 TED Talks. I've been on ESPN. I travel all over the place giving speeches on perspective and understanding and training sales teams on how to deeply connect. I never expected that to happen. So what I do now, you said we were talking earlier, you know, pandemic or whatnot. I do webinars for that now. We do Zooms on that. And we get people inspired on things they could do during difficult times to really hit people in the heartstrings and build that connection. And I can be contacted through the website on that, MatthewSNewman.com.
Cool, cool. Slightly off-piste. How do you think the Giants are going to do this season?
I am optimistic. Let me throw that out there right now. I am optimistic because they're building the offensive line. They're built, you know, listen, it's all about the trenches, bringing those hog mollies, as Dave Gettleman likes to call it, and start blocking people for Saquon Barkley. So I'm optimistic there. I just hope we'll see it. I hope we'll see baseball. I hope we'll see basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in this strange environment, soccer as well, too. But I would leave everybody with one thought as well, too. With all that's going on, with all the craziness, homeschooling, not seeing friends and family, hug your kids. Yeah. Life's a lot more fragile than we realize. And just take one brief period of time and just live in the moment a little bit.
Thanks, Matt. Listen, before we go, we ask the same 5 questions at the end of every single podcast. And I'm going to ask exactly the same to you, Matt. Who's the leader that you look up to the most?
My dad.
Yeah?
No question.
Yeah, yeah. What would be the worst job that you could ever do and why?
The worst job that I could ever do? That's a great question. Probably something I never talk in. I would say the worst job I could ever do would probably be, probably in the pandemic, would be taking tickets at a movie theater. Would be my guess.
What did you want to be when you grew up? And I think you touched on this when we were talking.
So it's funny. I wanted to be in financial services around the college time. Before that, I just wanted to play for the Yankees.
Did you? Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn? What's your preferred social network and why?
You know, that's an excellent question. I find they all have differentiations. Facebook's about me showing you pictures of my kids and my dogs. LinkedIn's about building business up, which we do a lot on. Instagram's a little bit of a combo of both. Twitter, I still don't really understand to this day right now. Yeah. I kind of like Instagram. I kind of like Instagram the most and LinkedIn, but I think you have to know, what am I using it for? Like, I don't think any of your friends on Facebook want to see the next, you know, business venture you're heading into. They want to see the picture of your dog, like, you know, jumping up in the air or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And the last question we've got on the podcast is, what was the last book that you read?
That's a great question. The last book I read is a book by a very good friend of mine named Anthony Robles. I've read it a multitude of times. He's not only a wonderful human being, he's a great friend that I'm very proud to have. He is a wrestler who won the national championship at the Arizona State University, and he was born with one leg. And he's gone on to break the pull-up record. He's won the ESPY Award on ESPN. I get told all the time how much I inspire the speeches, the books. Let me tell you something. Anthony Robles inspires me, and I was gifted to be able to read that multiple times.
Wow. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you so much for having me.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head? No. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.